It is another Saturday morning in CCU land when we talk cars, trucks, vans, and problems you might be having with yours. This is CCU's Car Care Show, and it's your chance to ask a mechanic whatever question you may have in mind. And Nick Stoffel is that particular guy here. He is an ASE-certified technician at Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Denny.
Is it hot enough for you?
It's pretty warm out, and as you know, I run hot, so this is not the best time of the year for me, but I'll survive. I'll stay in the shade.
I was just thinking, I was in getting an oil change this past week at Lloyd's, and I was just wondering, is this a typical year? That is, are you getting customers in needing AC repair more than usual, or is it just usual?
I would say it's pretty typical, and we always kind of joke about it, and obviously we're past the month of May, but if we have hot weather in May, it usually sets up to be a pretty good AC season for us, you know, because people don't want to sit through the whole summer without having their air conditioning working. And then as we go along into August and September, people might opt to say, you know, I might just wait till next year. But you never know. You know, you can have a hot week in September, October, and, you know, people have to kind of decide what's best for them.
Yeah, absolutely. If you'd like to call Nick or text Nick, whatever question you may have, you don't have to be a motorhead or a gearhead to ask some detailed question. If you drive and have a problem with your vehicle and want to know ahead of time before you bring it in what could be wrong, yeah, call us or text us. Just one number for either, 651-461-9226. As I said, Nick, I was in this past week getting an oil change, and as I'm sipping my coffee and just kind of looking at my phone, and I'm just glancing through the glass, and I see one of your technicians look like he was rotating tires, is my guess. And once those tires were off, and I looked down and looked up later because I heard kind of a different kind of noise. It looked like this technician was buffing the brakes. I mean, the tires were off. Was he doing something that I've never seen before?
Well, I'm sure that was Mike, and he was cleaning the hub surface where the wheels are mounted. So, you know, the hub surface is usually a steel material where a lot of the wheels are an aluminum-type product. And when you put the two together, you add a little winter, a little summer, and everything in between, you get some corrosion built up there. And oftentimes when we rotate the tires, we'll notice that corrosion is built up. Well, if you have corrosion, you don't have a very flat surface. So we like to clean that surface when we reinstall the tires. They're flat and straight, because a lot of times what can happen, you get a slight variation there, end up a little vibration, a little something's out of round, and then you start to notice that over time. So we try to keep things ship-shape, keep them clean and the way they're supposed to be.
Yeah, so it wasn't the brakes at all, because I was kind of far away.
No, you're not going to buff the brakes. It was I assure you, he was cleaning the hub surface where that wheel mounts up to.
All right, kind of go the distance there, do that little extra work. That's kind of cool. Another brake question that came in earlier. This brake fluid question. How often? I think we've had this before. How often do you change brake fluid?
Well, if you do check your maintenance interval, there will likely be a time frame. It's most common, to be honest. Usually when we do the brakes, you notice that fluid gets discolored. It's hydroscopic, meaning it absorbs water. It gets dirty. It's a hydraulic system. You want that system working optimally, so we got to keep good, clean fluid in there. So oftentimes we'll do it when we do a brake repair or a brake replacement. Otherwise, you can check your owner's manual, like I mentioned. It'll have a certain amount of time, miles, or years that it should be done.
You know, we joke, maybe not joke about it, but and I've learned to once in a while look at the owner's manual. It's amazing what you can find in there if you take the time to do it. Some of them are pretty detailed. But yeah, it's worth a glance or two from time to time.
Well, take the time to get those comfort features set up. You know, whether it's like your seats. You know, you can have different settings for the seats. Whether it's you or your spouse driving the vehicle, it can be automatically preset to that location. So every time I get in my wife's vehicle, I'm always moving the seat around, and she gets mad because when she gets in, it's not where she likes it. And I should probably set that up in her car, to be honest. So therefore, I can just hit the one or the two, and the seat will go to the position that's most comfortable for her or I.
I was thinking about doing it. Of course, I did not do it. You and I have talked a lot on this show about using the actual key to, you know, kind of use your work, exercise your door locks. I have yet to do that. We talk about it, but you should do that occasionally.
We talk about a lot of things on the show that I should probably do also.
Right. You know, do as I say. Yeah.
You go back, as you know, I grew up working at a gas station. In those days, we checked tires and oil, and we, took the squeegee and cleaned the windshields and did all those little things that probably did make a difference. And now we're so busy, so comfortable, we're filling our tank looking at our phone versus, walking around the car, look at those tires, open the hood, look under the hood, you might learn something, you might find something that might be wrong, you might see a leak. I mean, any of those things are important, and it can prevent you from having problems.
I'm looking at the tech screen, and evidently somebody may be having a lifter problem, because it's just one brief question. How can you find out which lifter is bad, which specific one, they ask?
Well, you need to isolate the cylinders. If the lifter's bad, we have low compression, a compression test would work. A lot of times you can look at the live data with the scan tool, see how the cylinders are firing. You can take a listen for the noise stethoscope, code each different cylinder, and try to find it. So there's a different, I guess, options you have depending on the vehicle, accessibility. But usually if there's a lifter problem, that repair can get quite involved, expensive. You're pulling the valve covers off, taking some of the valve train apart, gaining access. Some vehicles, you actually have to remove the cylinder head to even get to those. So you definitely want to pinpoint which one it is before you rip it into that.
All right, very good. Let's take a quick break, Nick. We'll invite our listeners again to join in. By the way, Nick will be with us till just about 7:45, so our time goes by so quickly. So, again, we always like to ask, let's hear from you sooner rather than later. Call or text your car care question at 651-461-9226. Right now in the Twin Cities, we're at 72. We're heading to 90 today, 92 tomorrow, 91 now on Monday, so three hot days and then a bit of a respite. We'll talk about weather as we always do on these weekends here on Newstalk 830 WCCO. Exactly 7:20 on a Saturday morning. Denny Long back with Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. Nick, we always like to ask you, too, for those folks that maybe need some help with some repair, or certainly you're always open to answer some questions. How do we find Lloyd's?
Yes, and that is true. We are always available to answer your questions. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. And if you're out for a stroll on this warm upcoming week, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand, which is the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. And then finally, do check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
We'll give you that info before Nick leaves us, which is about 7:45 this morning. Our phone number, 651-461-9226. Also happens to be our text number, and we have a bunch of those, Nick. So let's get back to them. Here's a 2012 Chevrolet Cruze. The air conditioning blows nice and cold. This is interesting. Until I take the car through a car wash or drive in the rain. Then the air conditioning blows warm for a few hours until the car dries off, it seems, and then goes back to blowing cold. Now, if the car is dry, it works perfectly. Any ideas on a cause of that?
I don't. I wonder if they have it, I'm always trying to think here. Maybe it's on some sort of auto setting, and when it gets wet, it cools down the temperature sensor, but even that you think would be inside of the vehicle. I don't know, honestly. That's a good one. Hopefully when they get it figured out, they'll let us know what it was. But my outside, I'm thinking there's some sort of temperature sensor trying to read the outside temperature, inside temperature, and something's getting mixed up. It'd be my first guess, I guess, at best.
I'd probably do experiment with maybe this person already has, with the recirculating, recirculating air versus the outside intake. I don't know. But, yeah, we'd love to hear if they found an answer to that. Very strange. Another text says this. A family member drives a 2015 GMC Acadia. Recently, he lost any amplified sound, the blinker sound, radio, the tailgate beeps, etc. We're wondering if heavy rainfall may have shorted out a fuse or the amplifier. Have you had any experience with this?
Well, first thing, this is a priority because we need to have our listeners able to hear us. So get this fixed immediately. In all seriousness, possibly, depending on how significant the rain, if there's a place where water can leak. A lot of time these amplifiers are kind of hidden in different places. And they could be in the trunk of a vehicle or, back where the spare tire used to be. And a lot of times there's areas where water can get in there. So, it's fair to say you know, if the inside of the vehicle is dry, okay, that, you probably feel better about that. But then, you know, you got to look underneath and look in those little cubbies and corners and try to locate where that amplifier is. Once you've located it, try to determine if any water could get in there. But it is possible, you know, likely just on its own. I doubt it. But, you know, if there's a if it's in the trunk and the seal went bad, there's a lot of debris in that ceiling surface. A lot of times water can kind of weep in there a little bit or through a sunroof. So I would first off find it. Also find the fuse box. You know, a lot of times in the owner's manual, they'll tell you the location the fuse is and which fuse is for what item or what circuit. Maybe the fuse itself is just blown for a number of reasons. Replacing the fuse might get it working again.
And for those that have never tried to do that very thing as far as a fuse, what will a blown fuse look like?
Well, a little secret is, and you have to be careful to make sure which ones you grab. You know, they're all color-coded, and the coloring is based on the amperage. So if you get the fuse box or the cover off, a lot of times it'll have numbers, and the owner's manual oftentimes will tell you what they're for. So you find another fuse with the same amperage that is maybe not critical, allow the vehicle to start. You can swap them just to see if it'll work. Obviously, swap them back when you're done. Because a lot of times when you look at these fuses with the bare eye, you think it might be good or might be bad. You don't really know. So if you take a known good fuse, switch them, see if the item that's not functioning starts to work, well, then there's a clue that the fuse is blown. But let me follow up with that. If a fuse is blown, the purpose of the fuse is to protect the wiring, meaning that whatever the fuse is powering, if it's a light, it's a radio, it's the heater, something within that circuit takes too much power, too much juice, it's going to blow the fuse before it melts the wires. So if something did that, there's something going on. You know, there's a short somewhere, maybe something got wet like that last question was. Something had happened. Now, if you've resolved that problem, replacing the fuse, you have no problem. But if you think throwing a fuse in there is going to just fix it, that's not always the case. So be careful when you're replacing a fuse. Make sure you know everything on that circuit. Make sure all those items are working properly because you don't want to create more problems for yourself.
Yeah, good info. Texter says, good morning. I have a 2008 Dodge Charger, 151,000 miles. Every once in a while when I'm starting the car, I turn the key in the ignition. The car seems to go into a cycle of trying to start but not completely starting. So I have to shut it off and then turn it back on. What do you think could be the issue there?
It sounds like it's trying to prime itself, like maybe something with the fuel system. The fuel pressure's bleeding down. Maybe a relay's not cycling like it should. You know, anytime we have a situation, and you know, in most cases where, you know, it's hard to start, but if we kind of crank on a few times, eventually it will start. I always kind of consider that your warning. Because if it's just barely starting this time, there's no promise it's going to work next time. So I think what I would do is, you know, take it in, share the example. And if this is one of those situations where it only happens the first time in the morning or after it's sat for a very long time, make sure you coordinate that. So when you do take it in, they can have it the first thing in the morning or have it where it sat for a long period of time. So when they go to start the vehicle, they can experience the problem too. But I suspect they'll be going down the path of something with the fuel system, whether it's bleeding down, not getting powered up, and it's eventually happens and the car fires up and runs.
All right. Well, good luck with that search. Look at a text that kind of jumps around. So let's see if I can't piece this puzzle together. Looks like it's a 2008 Ford E150. We put in a new battery last fall. Maybe they mean an F-150. And we'd like to sell the vehicle now. What's happening with it now is if it sits for a while, it won't start. So we need to charge the battery and have to spend – they don't want to spend too much time to get ready for it. We like this. It turns the radio on by itself. Not sure what the problem is. They don't want to have to spend too much to get it ready to sell. What do you think is going on? Another electric, and those electric problems they're kind of tough sometimes, aren't they?
They can be. Maybe it sounds like we should get those two vehicles together, and together they'll have one working system.
Yeah.
So it's a van. The E150 would be the van version on the Ford line. And some good clues here. I replaced the battery. Now it's it sits for a period of time, it's going dead, it's turning the radio on its own. So something's backfeeding there, and it doesn't necessarily have to be expensive to figure it out. Now, repairing might be a different story because we don't know what's wrong yet. So I think it's worth saying, take it in, share that, leave it with the shop. They'll take a meter, put it on there. They'll check for a drain in the system. They'll determine how much power is being drawn from the battery once it's shut down. Once they know that amount of power that's being pulled from the battery, at that point they can kind of go to, you know, back to those fuses, individual circuits, to try to determine which one of these circuits, fuses, has a drain on it. And then from there, we determine the circuit. Then we find out what's on the circuit. So, you know, people always wonder why it's so costly to diagnose these things. Because you start with the problem, you determine how much current's happening, you determine which circuit is on, then you need to go to those components within that circuit and test them and come to find the base of the problem, which can take an hour, 2, 3 hours sometimes, and then come to find out it was a latch that wasn't latched or something that you didn't know, like, you know, inside the trunk there was a light that was still lit. And, you know, it might seem very easy in hindsight, but through the process to figure out what, where, and why can be very time-consuming. So in this situation, I would say spend the time and the effort to figure out exactly what is wrong. Once you know, maybe you can eliminate it. Maybe it's not necessary, or maybe it's an easy fix, a bad ground wire or something like that, you know, or it could be something more costly with the computer or something along those lines. But until you know for sure, it's probably safest just to get the facts first before you make that decision.
Let's do another text before we have a look at that weather forecast. It's a 2013 Toyota. The texter just wants to know, evidently needs a wheel bearing replaced. Is that a costly job? And there again, variables. Who knows? Timing, what else you might find?
There is a lot of variables. You know, a hub bearing could be $150 or $350. The labor process, where they can be mostly external, and what I say by that is you can pull the brakes off, take a couple of bolts off the backside, and it comes right off. Sometimes they're enclosed with the axle and some other components, some all-wheel drive components, where it can be more time-consuming. So, you know, on a wheel bearing, if the issue is that, you know, the anti-lock brake light is on because the sensor's not working properly or the reflector's not reading properly, you know, you probably have a little time. But if you're in because it's making a noise, and I always like to use this is your warning, because it is, on a wheel bearing, if you're starting to hear that humming noise, that's telling you one of those ball bearings themselves has gone bad and it's coming apart. Now, you'll notice if you're going down the road, you pick up speed, the frequency changes, you kind of switch lanes left to right, the frequency changes. As that keeps happening, it's causing more wear and tear. That wheel bearing will become loose at some point, and obviously it can become more dangerous. So that humming noise you're hearing is your warning. You need to get that thing replaced or repaired. So that's kind of your heads up. Take it in and get it fixed.
Yeah, absolutely. Hang on, Nick. We'll take a break, find out about this hot forecast. When we come back, we'll answer some more car care questions at 651-461-9226. From Newstalk 830, this is WCCO. And welcome back this Saturday morning. It's always time for car care. And Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive answering those questions as usual this morning. Josh, us folks here, we're talking off air about a problem you have with your vehicle. What exactly is it? Sounds like another detective.
So what I've been having with my Equinox, so I have two fobs. I have basically would have to give my wife, and then the other one kind of has the buttons eroded and broken out of it. I've seen this with other GM fobs, especially with Chevy, where just the wear and tear over a few years kind of just, I think it's rubber, I think they're made out of, but I'm not exactly sure the composure of the key fobs. Nonetheless, I've been having an issue where I lock it, and then if I'm still within like distance walking away or whatever, my alarm will start just randomly going off. And I don't know if it's a faulty security system, if it's maybe corrosion in one of the eroded buttons. I'm not 100% sure what's going on with it, because I left my car last night and I got about, you know, a couple hundred feet away, heard two little honking noises, and that usually does it before the alarm starts. And then I went to start walking back toward it, and then it kind of just stopped on its own. So I don't know if it's just a faulty area in the electrical system or what's going on with it, but it's, I just don't want to have to drive somewhere and then have to fight to try and keep the alarm off.
Does it happen with both fobs or just the one?
I'm not, I'm, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not able to pinpoint which fob.
I think that's your detective work. I think if the one fob, because I think you're right, you've done a lot of the leg work.
Yeah.
If there is some corrosion in there, and so it thinks you're hitting the panic button, but you're not. And as you're walking away, it sees that and it sets the alarm up. So get that key far away from the vehicle. Use the other fob, you know, for a couple days and see if it happens with that one. I think you're going to find out that fob itself, because you kind of mentioned once you're still within range of it, but once you're not in range, nothing happens. Well, what's the one thing that makes a difference? That fob. So I think you're on the right path there. Another thing you could try is replacing the batteries on that fob. Maybe the batteries are getting weak. Maybe the signals are getting mixed up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a battery's a couple dollars. It's pretty simple.
So I did swap that out yesterday.
You did? Okay.
I did.
So
yeah.
Swap the fobs. Try the other fob for a few days. I think you're going to find out that it's related to the fob itself.
Got it.
All right. And Josh, let us know their next show.
What happened?
The problem with one of the fobs too is it's able to unlock and lock and all that stuff, but once you put it in the ignition, it doesn't register. Like, you turn to the ignition, it doesn't start. So I have to maybe try and resync one of the fobs up, because it's the more lesser used fob that has all the buttons on it still that does not work, unfortunately. So I have to play a game of Operation to get to unlock and lock with the other fob. Stick a little key in there and try. It's difficult.
Well, let us know. Do let us know when you solve that issue. We still have time for text questions and phone calls, for that matter. Here is another one, Nick. 2017 Honda CRV, 100,000. I think it's 100,000 miles on it. Dealer wants to do all kinds of maintenance that would cost $2,000, including spark plugs, valve adjustment, etc. Question is this really necessary? The manual has no maintenance schedule and relies on, quote, a maintenance minder, and texter's not getting any alerts for service. What I've learned from this show is that Honda is not to pick on them, because I used to own them. They do need, at one point, valve adjustments, right?
Yeah, a lot of models, that is correct. And they do have the maintenance minder where the letters and numbers will come up on the dash. However, there's also kind of a time frame, right? So, you know, I'm not saying that those particular items are due. Obviously, each case, each vehicle is a little bit different. But periodically, yeah, spark plugs are a wearing item. There is an interval they need to be replaced at. And they need to be done. You know, we were going to become too worn. It's too much stress on the ignition coils, and we have a failed coil. And a lot of the reason for these maintenance items is to prevent breakdown and to keep everything working as it should, because once something is worn, it's putting undue stress on something else. And, you know, sometimes it's frustrating. You know, power steering fluid, do I really need to change it? Well, you really should, because it's contaminated and full of debris. It's really hard on the pump. We ignore it. 6 months later, all of a sudden we have this horrible whining noise because the pump is failing. Well, it's too late to change the fluid now, you know, and that, you know, same with the spark plugs. Do I have to do them now? Okay, maybe not today, but you need to do them soon. The problem is, once you leave the shop, go about your life, you forget about them, you know, and then on a hot and humid day, you start your car up and it's misfiring and bucking and jerking, the check engine light's on. Well, the spark plugs are so worn that now they created a failure with an ignition coil. So we had a maintenance item that we should have resolved, resulting in a breakdown, which is inconvenient and more costly. So you have to be careful, because I do know sometimes people or places might get a little overzealous with recommending some of these items. But if they can explain to you what, why, and how, I would say that if they know what they're doing and they can explain it, they're telling you the truth. So it is expensive, unfortunately, but, you know, kind of the way the world is these days, you know, our industry, I feel, is starting to get compensated for the work they do. These folks that fix cars are highly intelligent. They go through lots and lots of training. There are some common themes, but oftentimes we work on, each shop, at Parkway, there's 20 cars a day and there's 40 cars at Lloyd's, and all makes and models and different problems. And these folks can get through them and get them back on the road in a timely manner. And they need to be paid for that. So I know it's frustrating. It's gotten expensive. But I assure you, if they can tell you what, why, and how, they're there to help you.
All right. Just a quick question before we let you go. When spark plugs are changed, whenever that interval is, are there new wires put in or just the plugs?
Well, you know, you're dating yourself, Danny. Most vehicles have a coil over plug, meaning there's one ignition coil plugged right in the top of the spark plug. There are still a few vehicles out there, some older vehicles that have, you know, there's not many with cap rotor and wires, or there's none with points, but, you know, usually it's the spark plug itself, as long as the coil has no damage to it.
Very good. I had to ask. All right, Nick, let us know how to find Lloyd's, and then we hope to talk next week. But, yeah, give us direction. How do we find Lloyd's?
Yes, sir. First thing, if you have a question and there's a shop in your neighborhood or dealership that can help you, you don't have to come see us, but we will answer your questions. You can reach us at 651-228-1316. If you're in St. Paul on Grand Avenue or at 982 Grand, and then finally, check out our website, which is lloydsautomotive.net.
Very good, Nick. Thanks for all the help, and let's talk next week.
Sounds like a date. Thanks, Danny.
Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive.